This is the I Read Comic Books podcast, the very best podcast for regular comic book fans. I'm your host, Mike Rappin, and joining me this week, a punk rock prom queen in a brown paper magazine, Paul Jaisley.
Hello, humanoids.
And Nick White.
For the first time in a while, I don't get the reference.
Oh, that's okay. I, for some reason, as I sat down to write my notes for today, I was thinking about Josie and the Pussycats, and that song came on. And, you know, everyone should just go search those lyrics, listen to the song. It's one of the greatest songs ever recorded in the early 2000s, mm-hmm. as far as I'm concerned. And we recorded a whole episode on Josie and the Pussycats and IRC Movie Club. And I still think very fondly about that movie. I don't know. It's a special time in cinema.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm very excited today to talk about comic books because it's one of my favorite things to do, especially with you two. Last week I said the boys are back in town. For some reason, that's what was in my head. But before we talk about comic books, I have one quick announcement. We're going to be doing an IRCB episode live on Twitch. We do these kind of every other month, every once in a while. If you're not following us on Twitch, go to twitch.tv/IRCBpodcast. March 24th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard, we're going to be recording an episode live that Sunday. Come hang with us while we talk about comic books and other things. We'll do our poster credits thing that we do exclusively for our patron folks. We'll do that live on Twitch that day. So if you want to come join us, you can watch as we record that live. And that's also a plug for our little Patreon. If you don't know, we do a little post-credit show. It's like 10 or 15 or 20 minutes about just everything else we didn't get to in the episode, whether it's comics or Pokemon trading card games and all sorts of other things that we usually record live on our Discord when we record. Just check out our Patreon at patreon.com/IRCBpodcast or check out the Spotify link for like the secret feed of IRCB. You can see all the stuff that we put on that feed that you can get access to for as little as $2 a month on our Patreon. So that's all the plugging I'm going to do for today. Instead, let's talk about comic books. Let's do the thing that we're actually here to do. I'm going to ask you guys two legally mandated questions. That is, how have you been? How have comic books been? Let's start with you, Paul.
You know, Mike, I've been doing pretty well. It's a beautiful day here in West Michigan, for those who are curious. 61 degrees and sunny, so as soon as we're done, I'm going to get out of the house, probably walk somewhere and try to read some comics outside for a change. So
hell yeah. Hell yeah.
It's always fun. And I've been slowly picking away at the giant stack of monthly floppy books that have been piling up around my apartment. I fell way behind comics, so I've been trying to take time every day to read some comics. So one that I read recently that stood out to me and I want to talk about on the show, because I don't think I've talked about the series too much, is Batman the Brave and the Bold. And I read issue 9 recently. I think issue 10 comes out this week. This is a really great series. I was actually kind of surprised how much I enjoyed sitting on a bunch of issues of these and reading them all as a bunch. It's an anthology series. So every time you get an issue, you get like 4 or 5 chapters, and each one's a different story that's being told. And it's Batman's in the title, but it is in the spirit of the old Brave and the Bold series. You know, that's an iconic name for DC Comics. And it's always mm-hmm. kind of like a team-up book throughout the 60s and 70s. And this is a twist on that, where you get a Batman story, you know, actually 2 Batman stories, and then it could be any other random characters will get a story. And like, for some reason, the past couple issues, maybe it's been the right mix of characters for me. I just really enjoyed every story being told. So issue 9, this was just interesting too, because it kind of features all concluding episodes or chapters of the stories being told. So it's kind of like a nice final point. And then I'm sure issue 10 will like pick up with brand new stories.
Nice.
The Batman story in here is called The Winning Card. This is the final chapter, part 4, and it's by Tom King and Mitch Gerrard, so you know it looks lovely, obviously. And it's them doing a retelling of the very first Joker story from Batman number 1 way back in, you know, 1940, whatever. So it's kind of cool to see that modern twist on it. It's a great conclusion to the story. Batman actually tells a joke, which I think is hilarious in it, and it's a joke that is kind of bad, and like the Joker laughs at it, but everyone else is like, that's like not even funny. So
okay.
The joke is he takes the Batmobile to like a garage to get fixed up. And he's like, oh, I think it's the battery. And he's like, the mechanic stands around with a dumb fit look on his face. He's like, all right, you got me. I don't know what a Turi is. Battery. So anyway.
Boo, this Batman. Boo.
So anyway, sorry, spoilers for that. That hilarious joke in this story. It's funny. So like, obviously it's a Batman story, so I love that. The other stories in here I really enjoyed. One is a Wild Dog story. And again, if you're going to do a deep cut DC character, Wild Dog is like the bottom of the barrel, but I love it because of that. So mm-hmm. if you're not familiar with Wild Dog, just do the Google search, look at it. It's basically, if the Punisher was created by DC Comics in the mid 80s. And that's literally right. What Wild Dog is. yeah. This is written by Kyle Starks with art by Fernando Pissarin. It's a really funny story. Kyle Starks is kind of a perfect fit for this kind of character. He's kind of like a schlub, you know, vigilante type character. And there's a lot of humor about that. You know, it's set in Davenport, Iowa. It's not a major like city. You know, there's all these sort of like Wild Dog is, you know, they kind of acknowledge this is like a low, like CD list character, but it's a really fun story because of that. There's actually a whole like riff in the story where like, if you look at Wild Dog's costume, he's got the hockey mask on and he's wearing a jersey of a local like university football team with the dog on it. He gets served with a cease and desist order by the university. He's like, you can't wear that because you're a vigilante. So that's a running joke throughout the story. It's him trying to find a new logo. It's really funny. Oh,
that's great.
You get an Aquaman story, and not just an Aquaman story. It's written and drawn by Gabriel Hardman, who's a great artist, great writer.
Wow.
I remember reading it, and right away, it's Aquaman having to fight the Dominators, who are an alien race from the Invasion crossover from the 80s that I remember reading when I was a kid. And in order to defeat the Dominators, he has to go to the Gorilla City and team up with Gorilla Grodd. I'm like, yes, this is exactly the kind of story I want to read, right?
Hell yeah.
So again, that's what I kind of like about this series. Like, you do get some deep cut characters, and it is kind of tongue in cheek, but it's also really well done with like great artists and writers on every story.
Mm-hmm. I always get curious about like the overlap of rogues galleries, right? Because Gorilla Grodd is typically a Flash villain, right?
Yeah.
And I don't really know Aquaman's like rogues gallery behind like beyond like Black Manta. So that's like, it just like they just kind of have to share everybody because yes, thank you, Nick. Just that like they have to kind of like share villains at this point. Other if you're not a Batman villain, you're kind of are just like shared among like the superheroes that are not Superman and Batman. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe
there's a villain outreach program where like every month like you get assigned to like go, you know, spend time with another, you know, in another hero's like universe and
right.
I watched
Venture Bros. Yeah.
It just strikes me to an homage to like the classic Brave and the Bold stuff from the 60s and 70s that Bob Haney and Jim Aparo did, where like that would be like Batman teaming up with the most random people. So like Batman teaming up with Commandy, or Batman teaming up with the Metal Men, or Batman teaming up with the Joker. You know, it gets the wildest combo. So I feel like it's an homage to that.
I see.
And then every issue kind of concludes with a standalone black and white Batman story. So if you're a fan of the Batman black and white series that DC has done over the years, they kind of picked up on that. The one in this issue is called Nor Is It the Batman. It's written and drawn by Bruno Redondo. And it's a good story. It's a kind of told from Alfred's perspective about the early days of Bruce becoming Batman and what he has to do to like look out for him. But there's a couple of moments that in this story that I absolutely loved where it's very early in Batman's career. He's being summoned by the Bat Signal. He goes to the top of the GCPD headquarters and you see him like sneaking up behind Commissioner Gordon, but Gordon like knows he's coming. He kind of plays along that he's surprised. You know what I mean? And the same thing happens when he leaves. Like the way it's drawn, it's like Batman sneaking down the side of the building and Commissioner Gordon can see where the rope is tied on the rope. So it's like, clearly he's climbing up, but I'll pretend that he just vanished. I didn't, he's stealthy. Like little details like that was like, I thought was a really funny twist on the scene that you've seen in every Batman story. Mm-hmm. So it was really fun. I think this is a great series. Like I said, if you want sort of like a variety of stuff, it's cool to see one of the big two kind of commit to an anthology type series. I'm excited to see the new stories in issue 10, but issue 9 was fantastic, I thought, across the board.
Nice. Yeah, like you said, it's good to see that there's like an anthology series like this out there. I think like Harley Quinn, Black, White, and Red that they did was also kind of in that same vein. I really like that just because you got to see a million people trying different Harley Quinn stories, but it was issue by issue rather than multiple stories broken up, which I think there's like some benefits and drawbacks of both of those formats. But this sounds really cool. This sounds really great. Nick, what about you? How have you been? How have comic books been?
Like Paul pointed out, it's a beautiful day. I think it's up to like 65 over here and some of the flowers are blooming and after the show I might go outside, but also I have Paramount Plus, so I think maybe another episode of Deep Space Nine instead. Okay. We'll see.
I wasn't sure where you were going with Paramount Plus, because I feel like there is no big selling point unless you're a Trekkie.
Like Paramount Plus has like Beavis and Butthead, mm-hmm. and Star Trek, and if you're a Ninja Turtles fan or a SpongeBob fan, then it's a great place to be. And
okay,
I don't know. I okay. don't have anything more. Paramount
You're really,
Plus,
really selling it. Thank yeah. you for the sponsorship, Paramount Plus. They do not sponsor us.
But, yeah. Otherwise, this was the opening weekend for Formula One, which for the first 2 weeks, is weirdly going to be having races on Saturdays instead of Sundays, which was fine. Because normally the race is on Sunday, and then I just get all pissed off and angry at the results and just roll straight into my work week, you know, mad. Look, I've realized now, because of Formula One, I'm more familiar with the Dutch national anthem than the American national anthem. I don't know the words, but I am pretty certain I could hum that song in my sleep.
Okay.
So minor spoilers for those out there wondering if this year is going to be different. Signs are pointing to no. Yep.
This is way over my head. I don't know.
Look. I'll make this very simple. Max sure. Verstappen won. Minor spoilers. Shocking spoilers. I don't think anyone does sports betting on Formula One because it's the same goddamn result every week right now. People be like, oh, what do you think about when Lewis Hamilton was winning all the time? Look, I wasn't watching at that point, so it doesn't bother me.
I mean, at that point, you're probably just doing bets on like who's going to come in like second to last, right? That's like maybe the most risky, I don't know,
who's
kind
gonna
of bet.
Who's going to DNF? Who's going to crash?
Right, uh-huh. right. Betting on people's lives. Yeah, that sounds freaking awesome. Anyways,
you
Nick.
Put it like that.
Nick, what comics did you read?
Yeah, so thank goodness I got into some comics as well. I sat down and I read Phantom Road 1-9.
Nice.
This is written by Jeff Lemire, art by Gabriel H. Walta, colors by Jordi Belair, letters by Steve Wands. I actually did it, you know, for a while there, every other month I would basically come back to Phantom Road and I would just be like, I don't remember any of these characters. I don't remember their names. I don't remember the mechanics of how this universe works. I don't understand any of this. I've retained none of it. And I'd walk away and say, I don't want to deal with this, man. I'll come back in 2 months and expect something different. So I finally sat down on Friday and I read all of the issues that are out to this point. And you know what? Full credit to Jeff Lemire. This book is absolutely understandable if you sit down and you don't take off 2 months between revisiting it.
Okay.
Nice.
The book has weird things going on. There definitely are some deeper mysteries afoot, but like Lemire is totally taking his time to build this out. But in terms of the plot and the characters that are presented to us, it's really not that convoluted at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, put another check on the your bingo card of maybe not all books should be serialized. Maybe some things should just be strictly volumes. Is it the most like hooky read? Like, do you finish every issue and you're super eager for the next? I don't know if I'd say it's that, but is it definitely like flowy and readable? 100%. I'm not really sure how much I can or could or should say about just what the book is about. I think a lot of that's because we really still don't know yet.
Sure.
But I also really don't want to divulge too much because I think everything should be a mystery. I know we use this a lot with Paul and I try not to abuse it, but honestly, there are some real weird, you know, Twin Peaks-esque trappings here that I think you'd probably dig.
Okay.
Which isn't surprising. It's Lemire. Twin Peaks seems to find his way into almost anything and everything he does if given the opportunity.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is kind of like, you know, I feel like we can safely talk about kind of like mostly what's happening, at least in the first issue, right? Because I feel like Phantom Road is a kind of questionable, like, what the hell is going on here? A story about a trucker and another woman, right. And they somehow end up in this I don't know, shadow universe on top of our own universe, where there's these weird faceless monsters things that are absolutely terrifying, and they're trying to figure out what the hell is going on. And I think in subsequent issues, they continue to try to figure out what is going on without much success. Like, I think that's the safest way to describe this book.
And that's the funny thing, because it's like, most of the time you'd be like, well, this is what I can share, but I don't want to spoil the rest. And with this book, it's like 9 issues in, this is all I can say for sure. I can't speak to anything else.
But 9 issues later, though, you're still interested and hooked on the series, right? And maybe this comes with, like, you know, us, because I'm in the same boat. I think last I read was issue 7. Like, we have this kind of trust with Jeff Lemire that he's going to do something that's going to be interesting by the end, right? So we're giving a lot of, like, chances and a lot of, like, I don't know. We're giving him a lot of, like, slack on saying, well, I don't really understand all of this, but I feel like it might pay off, right?
Right. And, of course, he's, you know, paid his dues with Image to the point where he can get away with more or less just letting it turn into whatever it needs to turn into. And I think what threw me... And I guess this is like the one tip I would give for other readers who maybe haven't started or haven't gotten this far. But like, there's a point where you sort of shift perspective from the truck driver and his partner to this FBI agent that's sort of investigating, more or less, you know, investigating the two of them and these weird creatures that are showing up, you know, dead alongside the highway. And when that character gets introduced, a whole cycle of characters that surround that FBI agent also get introduced. And if you don't really start paying attention to that circle of individuals, like forgetting all of them and sort of they can really complicate things if you don't stay on top of that. So that was kind of the point for me where coming back every other month just became kind of insurmountable.
Yeah, Paul G in the chat is saying that Lemire has said that Phantom Road is something like 50 issues. So,
sure. But honestly, it's beautiful. It's weird, much like most Lemire works. It's pretty sad, and you've got, you know, fleshed out characters, but they're fleshed out in terms of how much trauma they've experienced. Which is a good segue. To point out that this book does involve, you know, such mature themes as drug abuse or addiction, dealing with the loss of a child. These aren't like ever present in your face, kind of like HBO season 1 syndrome, where it's like, we're mature and we demand to be taken seriously. And here are the tough things we're going to tackle. some of these are more just hovering in the background, but they are there. And I do want to warn readers. And I think most readers who have read Lemire understand that he's not afraid to tackle these subjects, and they do come up, but they are handled pretty respectfully. So it is worth pointing out that some of that stuff is also in this work. So, you know, just be aware.
I'm curious. Again, I go back and forth on Jeff Lemire stuff. Like, some of it I like, some of it doesn't work for me, but I like Walta's art enough to give this a shot.
Yeah.
And I'm also, I just recently started my annual Twin Peaks rewatch, so I'm in that mindset already. So maybe a nice connection.
It definitely has that Twin Peaks feel of stuff that's weird that just doesn't feel obligated to explain itself, which
that's my
I feel like
part.
Modern, it's the best, right? It's the best. And I feel like modern comics, especially where it's like you have one issue, maybe 3 issues, explain everything or you're a failure. That mindset just seems pervasive, and so things that are like, I'm not going to explain this, do I know where this is going? I mean, maybe, but I'm not obligated to divulge that to you,
right?
Interesting.
Well, Nick, we'll compare notes when you finally get around to watching Twin Peaks season 3. We'll pick this conversation back up, because
I might as well now that
is it on
Paramount Plus merged with Showtime, and
there you go.
You know, they keep trying to upsell me, so
now's the time.
Exactly. But beautiful book. And the other really bizarre thing, and maybe it's deliberate, is I was so certain, based on the color work for the book, that Walta had colored this book himself, because it really looks like Walta colors. And then lo and behold, actually it's Jordi Belair. That was kind of a shock. It really looked like Walta colored this book himself. So
interesting.
Jordi Belair can do it all. I think that's what we're saying here, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
She's incredible.
There's something amazing. So cool as well, Mike. I don't know if you've noticed this, and I just want to say this. The flashbacks, like there are so many like tropey traditional like flashbacks, like let's set it in sepia tone, let's put it in black and white. And instead with this book, it's just a faintly lighter shade of the normal tones. Mm-hmm, everything is just a little bit softer, a little bit fainter. It doesn't, like I said, it doesn't flip into like black and white or something like that. And it's just, it's so subtle and effective. I don't know. I really like it. It's a really cool touch.
It's one of those things where I feel like if you read the physical book in the wrong lighting, you wouldn't realize it was a flashback.
Exactly.
That's maybe the only problem with it. But reading it digitally, it's clear, but it is extremely subtle. I do appreciate that. Yeah.
So yeah. Let me
talk about a book that I've been reading. I've been chilling this past weekend, which is very nice. Like I went out, grabbed my comics from my comic book shop, finally got my copy of Time Before Time Volume 5 so I can put it up on my shelf behind me. If you can see the video, I can't seem to figure out how to point with my finger on this video, but it's behind me on my shelf. Very happy to have that, as well as a couple other issues. Our Bones Dust number 3, finally got a copy of that. God, is that like the prettiest, coolest fucking book on the shelves right now? But yeah, I came home and I read some comics that I did not like, which is kind of a crapshoot. You know, you get some books and you take a look at them and they just don't click. I'll talk about that more in the post credits, I think, today. But I did manage to read a couple books that I liked. I started on Alan Moore's Swamp Thing, the first book of that. I didn't finish it, so I don't want to talk about that till I finished it. But I also read The Last Mermaid number 1. This is from Image Comics. This is by Derek Kirk Kim. I did not even know that this book existed. Hadn't seen anything about it until we got like the email from Image with their weekly books that were coming out. It's a really, really simple comic about a mermaid and her axolotl, her pet axolotl named Lottie. They live inside of a mech somewhere near a desolate wasteland of far future California. They're desperate to find water because this mech that they're in is like this, it's a giant bubble that is attached to like arms and legs that turn into like a driving tank and then transform into like a giant walking mech. It's maybe like one of the most coolest, shocking like transitions, like, oh, she's just gonna drive around in this thing, and then all of a sudden she's like, nope, presses some buttons and suddenly this bubble rotates and now it's like a giant mech. It's awesome.
Mike is shocked by Transformers in the 2024, the year of our Lord.
I didn't think that the publisher of Transformers was gonna do a different mecha book.
I mean, you had me at mech, like, honestly. It's a mech.
It's very clear. It's on the cover. I just like didn't see the cover when I was reading through this. But anyways, it's a super simple comic. She's trying to find water in the desert. She knows that she's like on her last few days. We don't know anything about this world. It is so, so untold. All we know is that San Francisco is a giant desert and she's looking for water. We figure we're near the ocean. Maybe she'll be able to find it. I don't want to spoil the whole book because it's extremely simple and it's so refreshing to read a book that isn't trying to like subvert some kind of trope about like a story about a person trying to survive. Instead, this is just this mermaid woman. She's trying to survive. A couple things happen. The book ends on a big cliffhanger. There's a mysterious figure in the background. It's like there's really not a lot to this book. But I think the thing that I appreciated the most, there's no caption box. There's no thought bubbles. It's really, really visually told. Like, yes, this mermaid character, she talks to her pet axolotl a little bit about, oh, I need to get water. Oh, no, we're on our last legs. Don't worry, buddy, please. You know, we're going to be fine. But on the whole, there's not a lot of dialogue. So this book, you fly through it and the art is super gorgeous, right? I love not having to think about what was going on in this book because the visual storytelling is so clear and crisp. Like Kim's art is very fantastic. It has like this almost airbrush quality to it, which makes the entire story kind of feel dreamlike or like softer than I think a lot of like dystopian, you know, awful future books tend to be. This book has like a really light touch to it and it's all because of Kim's art. So I really appreciate like the look of this mech that the mermaid is in, like the sand dune. cartoons. Like at one point we see the Golden Gate Bridge kind of like rusted and broken. Everything just looks, while it is like solid and structural and there's rocks and all this other stuff, everything still just has this soft feeling to it. I really, really like that. The colors are great. There's a lot of really cool contrasting things, like the mermaid, her mech, her axolotl. They're all like blues and greens, very like oceanic colors. And the rest of the world is like this harsh yellow, browns, oranges. So like there's this really nice contrasting thing that's going on. But yeah, at the end of the day, we get like zero answers as to why this story is happening, what's happening at all in the book, why the world is like this. And I think that's like three quarters of like the thing that drew me into the end of this book was like, I didn't know what the hell was going on. And that's a great hook to keep me reading. So I really want to check out number two. So if you're looking for something that's like very straightforward, very simple, I think The Last Mermaid number one is exactly the kind of book that you should pick up. It's nice and easy. And there's no, it's like no frills, just good comics. I really appreciate that.
Nice. Mike, you described a couple things with this book that made it sound a little all ages friendly, but also it's from Image. So yeah. I am curious, is this a book that you would say, you know, teenagers and up? Because I mean, it is post-apocalyptic. I don't know how many people.
Yeah. Wanted, I mean, you know, I would say,
what's your thoughts?
I would say that, you know, there's nothing that makes me think this couldn't be all ages, you know? Okay. It definitely doesn't appear to be like, it doesn't, at least in the first issue, doesn't seem to cover anything that's super mature. I don't think that it's aimed at all ages, but I don't see why you couldn't give this to like 13-year-old and they would have no issues with this book. And it feels like the vibe I get from this book in general is that it's kind of like not going to get into like hyper violence or hypersexuality, anything like that. Like very much reminds me of that Chroma book that came out pretty recently, where there's violence and there's action and there's a story there, but like you could give that to a younger reader at like maybe 12-13 years old, and I think they would get the exact same thing out of it that I got out of it, about, you know, like not conforming and, you know, oppressive powers, blah blah, all the things that make good YA books but also just make damn good comics in general. So I appreciate you asking that though, because I think that it's not explicitly stated, but I definitely don't see any reason why you couldn't get this. Again, I don't know where the book's going to go, so who knows? Issue two may be like
Issue two is where the roving bandits who resort to cannibalism suddenly get rolled into it. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But we'll see. But anyways, Last Mermaid number one, I enjoyed it. I think it's kind of one of those books that's off the radar for some people, maybe because it's not done by a big name. But I think it's definitely worth checking out. So.
Cool.
Let's move on though. Let's talk about comic books that we're looking forward to reading, comics that are next on the top of our pile, new, old, or just something that's maybe sitting in the back of your freaking Kindle library like mine. Alan Moore Swamp Thing is that one, but I'm not going to talk about that today. But before we get into what we're reading next, I do want to shout out the folks that are hanging out with us on Discord today. We had a lot of people say they've got a bunch of books next on their top of their pile. So I want to shout out to Kev, who's reading Daredevil by Chip Zdarsky, Tom, who's reading Yakohama Kadashi Kiku Volume 1, Jeff, who's reading his Chainsaw Man, he's catching up. Kyle's reading Akane Banashi, who's catching up on that. Brian's reading Monthly in the Garden with My Landlord, Volume 1. Kate's reading Hench Girl. Danny's reading Batman 145. A lot of folks reading a lot of really cool, interesting comics. Some stuff we've talked about on the show, other things we've just talked about in our Discord. As always, if you want to come and get your book shouted out of what you're going to be reading next, make sure to join our Discord. There's a link in the show notes. But let me kick things back over to, I'm going to say, Nick, what is on the top of your pile?
Okay, this is a little complicated.
Okay, never mind. Paul, what's on the top of your pile?
Yeah, that's good. That is the proper way to handle that, I think.
Tell us what's on the top of your pile. I'm just kidding.
So I think I was on the show 2 weeks ago and discussed Alien Blood, Black and White. White and Blood.
Yeah.
Whatever. And I think at the time I was like, yeah, this is fine, but actually I'm more up for Aliens What If. Aliens What If is not my pick this week because I already discussed it 2 weeks ago. Marvel does not need my help to sell their books. I'm excited for that book. Like, look, if you said to me, Nick, do you want to read a book written by Paul Reiser, his son, the creator and showrunner of ABC's The Goldbergs, and one or two other people, and I said, wait, how many people are writing this book? I don't care. It doesn't matter. Yes, sure. Let's do it. Yeah, I am excited for that. Giu Villanova is doing the art on that. They did the art on the IG-88 tie-in to War of the Bounty Hunters. Sounds great. I'm excited. Just full stop. I just wanted to at least put it out there. I'm pumped for that book, but I already sort of talked about that book.
And you talked about it again.
And I talked about it again because I looked it up and I was like, the guy who created the Goldbergs is right. What is this?
Nick, what is on the top?
Apparently that guy's written other comics too. He's written a lot of stuff for Marvel. Very weird. Just very, look it up, everyone. You have Google. You have you have Dogpile. You have Ask Jeeves. Just yes. Look into it. So instead, I want to promote a real underground indie comic book creator just trying to carve out his own mark at Image Comics. It's a struggle. It's a struggle for creators these days. So Robert Kirkman, you know, I hope this Void Rivals book works for you. I'm plugging Void Rivals number 7. As much as it pains me to do this, I wasn't going to plug that new Ninja Turtles book because, like, when your title is like 9 words, I'm sorry, I'm just not doing it. So this is Robert Kirkman with art by Lorenzo De Felici, colors by Matthias Lopez, and letters by Russ Wooten. This book drops on Wednesday alongside the very first trade of Void Rivals. So if you have not read any of it up to this point, there's the perfect jumping on point for you. It's almost like Robert Kirkman knows a thing or two about business outside of that whole legal mess with the artist from The Walking Dead. But De Felici is perhaps best known for drawing Oblivion Song, also with Robert Kirkman. That was at Image, ran for 36 issues from 2018 to 2022. He also drew another little book I read called Orphans. He was the colorist on Orphans. Which was a pretty decent read. If you feel that the whole we need to train children to fight an impending alien threat trope isn't too threadbare. So if you're interested, not a bad book.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I've enjoyed Void Rivals so far. I enjoyed the first arc, even if it was just a backdoor for Kirkman's manipulation of childhood nostalgiaverse.
Sure.
And I think I'll enjoy it even more if it keeps its distance from any Autobot Decepticon or G.I. Joe Cobra conflicts. Just sort of stay out of those. And clearly the initial conceit of this book involves two groups of people who have spent most of their entire lives having and attempting to try to eradicate the other from their little corner of the universe. So clearly they've already got that sort of us versus them thing going on anyway. I mean, just a basic conceit of this is that you have these two people. I don't even remember if they're from the same planet or if they're from neighboring planets. I don't remember, but they're in their same little corner of the universe. They both have been trained to hate the other group of people. And they've been sort of tied up in this war for a really long period of time. And at one point, this guy from one of the groups and this woman from the other group end up sort of stranded on this little, I think it's a moon. And they have to figure out if they're going to work together and get off this planet or if they're just going to try to kill each other or figure things out. And it's simple, but it's fun. It obviously escalates as they, you know, move away from this, you know, spoilers. They, you know, get off this moon and then have to sort of decide what to do with their lives from there. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I think it's simple. I love Felici's artwork. I really like that for a book, and especially considering the larger branching universe, that's clearly meant to be targeting mass appeal, that it doesn't really have a big two house style going on. It really does feel like it's kind of carving out its own visual identity, and it looks like something that you would expect to see maybe coming out of like a publisher like Europe Comics or maybe like Humanoids. Which, you know, imports a lot of Italian comics. So
did you read Chroma? I think De Felici did that book. I think you told me about Oblivion Song. I liked the first volume that I read and then never went back to it. Dave Felici did Chroma, and I was like, oh, 5-issue miniseries. It's kind of got a weird little story, but the art in that book is stupendous. And it's funny that you say like there's this like European style to it. I mean, I think Dave Felici is Italian, so maybe it makes a little sense. Yeah. But still, like, it is surprising to see that style like leaned into rather than leaned away from for an image book. And I think Chroma is a perfect example of that. And if you're saying that it continues in Void Rivals, that might almost be enough reason for me to check out Void Rivals when previously I had no interest at all. I really, really like that guy's art style.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised that for a book that I think is clearly trying to target such a large audience, that it does feel like the art was not a, what do you want to call it, focus tested to hell, kind of like broad appeal, Jim Lee kind of thing.
What are you trying to say about Ryan Otley? Okay, Nick, what are you trying to say about Ryan Otley right now? Just kidding. Love you, Ryan Otley. I love you so much. But you're liking this book. You're recommending it. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, definitely. And the more that it stays away from Transformers, I will probably like it even more. So, yeah.
Oh, boy.
I know that I am probably in the minority, and I am sure Danny is blowing up the chat as we speak.
Listen, Danny left the chat, Nick, already. So before we even open up that can of worms, Paul, I got to ask you, what is on the top of your pile?
Well, I mentioned I was catching up on books I'd previously purchased. So that being said, I'm reading something I think about last time I was at this comic shop, and that is The Best of 2000 AD, Volume 5. I've talked about this many times on the show. I think if you're curious about 2000 AD, curious about anthology or science fiction comics in general, you have to be picking these up. They're so well curated. Every volume includes a brand new Dredge Dredd story, and this one is by Rob Williams with art by Chris Weston. So again, A-list creators doing a Dredd story for you. We get a classics Judge Dredd story, and this is The Art of Kenny Hu by John Wagner, Alan Grant, and Cam Kennedy. This is such a good story, and I don't want to spoil it too much because I think it's such a great Twilight Zone-esque story set in Mega City 1. It's one of the great Wagner and Grant stories where Dredd isn't really the main character. He's just kind of there, and it kind of just sets up the world of Mega City 1. The story is about this guy named Kenny Hu, who's an artist who comes to Mega City 1 to try to, you know, become a comic book artist. And through a series of events, he only has 24 hours in the city to, you know, get to the publisher and present his work. He keeps running into Judge Dredd, who keeps, like, you know, delaying him, trying to find reasons to arrest him, and he can't, you know, but he keeps delaying him. So Dredd just kind of a presence there in the city. And then by the end of the story, I will just say, like, this came out, I think it's like early 80s, like 81 or 82, it's originally published, and it's very prescient given the rise of AI art. What happens to Kenny Hu when he finally makes it to the comic book publisher? It's like, this could be published right now and be contemporary, you know, as a commentary on politics and pop culture. So that's great. And then, so these are things I've already read that are collected in this collection. There's other things I have not read, I will say that. The other thing in here that I think is a selling point, because I've read it and adore it dearly, is the first volume of Zombo, which is written by Al Ewing with art by Henry Flint. Zombo is the funniest, batshit, craziest comic I've ever read. And if you're familiar with Al Ewing's work for DC, this is some early Al Ewing stuff, and it is bonkers, off the wall, drop dead hilarious, funny comics. So the main premise is that Zombo is a hybrid human zombie that was created by the British government as a sort of like a weapon to be deployed in these, like, you know, on different planets that are hostile. So it's like, what's our last ditch, you know, weapon of mass destruction? It's a zombie human hybrid. But in order to, like, pacify him, they installed a sort of training device to, like, make him polite, so he doesn't just randomly eat people. So, like, the recurring gag is, like, every time Zombo shows up, is deployed, he politely asks, "I'm Zombo, can I eat you, please?" And of course, the bad guys get eaten by Zombo. There's a recurring, like, joke that Zombo is, like, he's a decomposing body because he's part zombie, but he's also part human, so he's kind of ripped, and he runs around wearing, like, a really small G-string. And it's because he was cloned by a male erotic dancer to become Zombo. And every page has either the most obscure pop culture reference or the most complex, like, dense philosophical reference. And it's like, it's somehow both the highest brow, smartest comic you've read and the dirtiest, the dumbest, like, funniest comic you've ever read at the same time. Amazing. I cannot recommend Zombo enough. So if you've not read Zombo, pick this up. You'll get basically the first whole volume of Zombo. in this. And there's a second volume that came out maybe like 10 years ago called Crime is, what is it? What is the name of the second? I have it somewhere on my shelf here. It is You Smell of Crime and I Am the Deodorant. So that's the second volume of Zombo you want to track down. So yeah, again, 2000 AD is like, they call it the galaxy's greatest comic. They can't call it that legally if it wasn't true. Like, that'd be false advertising. So
totally.
And these volumes and totally prove yeah. that.
And Britain has very strict, like, print libel, slander, you know, accuracy laws. So yeah. they would not be able to say these things if they weren't true.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're doing a disservice to yourself if you're not kind of checking this stuff out. Because I think it's some amazing collection of comics. You get so much good stuff in every volume of this. So, if you want to pick them up digitally, a little bit cheaper, it's well worth every penny. I think the new Dread stories are always great. The classic ones, they pick some amazing ones for all these. And again, if you want to read the funniest comic imaginable, it's Zombo. So you have to pick this up. That's my, okay. I'm saying you have to pick it up. That's your marching orders.
Listen, Paul, how terrifying is it to you that it feels like every single story from 2000 AD seems to be happening now? And does that terrify you? Because what did they know? And
there's something in the water over there in England. I think they just have a little bit of like the eye into the future.
It is, it is something that I've noticed when reading this stuff. It's the best kind of sci-fi where it's speculative in a way, but it's always social commentary what's happening right now. Like Dread has always been about what's happening in England, and when those stories are being written. So, here's a story about a comic book artist being ripped off, but you can read it because it's set in the future. It's like, oh, that's happening right now. The same things are happening to these artists. They're just facilitated by technology now versus just straight up, lying to people back then. So that story, like the Art of Kenny Hu, it's still timeless, even though it is written back then, because it's set in a sci-fi setting. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So it's interesting you picked this book, because I was just sort of looking earlier today at some stuff that I was going to read, and I was thinking about picking up that Rogue Trooper volume that you had.
Yes.
That essential reading or whatever.
That Rogue Trooper volume, though, is so good.
Oh, you read it, Mike? Oh,
I read. Good. I think I got halfway through it, but like it's unbelievable, right? Like it's fantastic.
So yeah, I've at this point, it's like there's just so much rich stuff in 2000 AD, and it's like you have such an amazing back catalog of 47 years worth of comics at this point to kind of go back and look through. And yeah, Dread stuff's always great, but I do like these volumes because they do have other stuff in here. And like, I just scratched the surface. I just mentioned three of the stories in this collection. There's other stuff that I'm not familiar with, and I'm very excited to dig into and find more about. I'm sure I'll find more new favorite comics, every time I read one of these best of collections.
Hell yeah. Well, let me talk about a book that is on the top of my pile this week. It was going to be Alan Moore's Swamp Thing because I'm finally doing it. I said I was going to do it last week. Finally decided after two trade paperbacks in a row of like 2 out of 5 comics. That's what I rated them. I wanted to read something that would actually like cleanse my palate a little bit. And I got halfway through the volume, but I'm actually got another book that I forgot showed up in the mail, I think on Friday, that I really want to get to. This is Stonehearted by Meredith McLaren. She did a Kickstarter for this book pretty recently. Meredith McLaren, you may know from Black Cloak, one of like the greatest comic books that came out last year. And it's so funny because I feel like I say that so often outside of the show, I always forget to talk about it on the show. So I'm sorry to the listeners out there who may not have heard me say very often that Black Cloak is maybe one of the best comic books you can buy, because it absolutely is. Go check it out. Kelly Thompson, Meredith McLaren, they are doing some stupendous work. Absolutely beautiful comic books. I just want to hold all of them in my hands and look at them all day, every day. So I needed to get more McLaren art in my life. So I decided to pick up her Kickstarter. It's described as a very indulgent 18 plus erotic, or excuse me, not erotic, a very 18 plus romance comic that McLaren decided to put on printed paper. I mean, I kind of know what that means, but I'm excited nonetheless to check it out because it's probably just a very horny comic book, and that's fine. It's like self-described as a fantasy romance comic where smut happens, spicy, explicit smut, but mostly it's two people falling in love. And I feel like I may end up getting in a little bit over my head here because I don't really read things that describe themselves as smut very often, because I'm a insecure conservative little boy in my brain, and I'm like, oh, sex, boobies, you know.
Is this the package you had to sign for from UPS?
No. No, but I, so I don't know. I don't really read books like this very often. I mean, I've read books that feature sex and people being naked and penises and boobies and all that other stuff, but never books that are like explicit, like, we're all about that. So we're going to see. I'm excited. It's a big, thick book because I think she's been making this comic for a while online, and now she finally put it together in one collection. But more of her art in my life is not a bad thing. So I'm very, very excited to check this out one way or another. But should be fun. Should be fun. I know McLaren does, like, just has a way with the way she draws things that just like clicks in my brain. Like, if you didn't read Heart in a Box, it's another book that she did with Kelly Thompson. Absolutely devastating book, broke my heart in half. And Black Cloak is fantastic. So, like, this is just more of her stuff in my house, and I'm very happy to have that. So, Danny's saying, yeah, possible title books that feature penises. Yeah, maybe, we'll see. but I don't know, Paul. Let's kick over to you. We already talked about your book. Sorry, I did things way out of order.
I'll talk about Zombo more. I'm happy to talk more about Zombo.
Sorry, yeah. I'm all over the place. I got totally lost. My numbers don't make sense in the notes. But anyway, I think that's going to wrap up the show for this week. Really glad we got to talk comics with everybody. I would say, again, check us out on Patreon. We just made some announcements recently this past month. We do a thing every month where we talk about what's happening in IRCB. Go check that out on our Patreon at patreon.com/IRCBpodcast, because it's really nice to just tell everybody what we got coming down the road. Things that aren't normally announced in the show until like the week before, you can get a little bit more notice than that. But otherwise, next week's show is going to be great. It's Kara, Kate, and Kate celebrating Women's Month and discussing some of their favorite comics by and about women. It's a fantastic episode. I've already listened to it. They recorded it a little while ago. It sounds great. So make sure to check that out next week. I want to say thank you to Paul and Nick for this episode this week. Thank you to Kate for proof listening. Thank you to everybody hanging out with us on Discord. Thanks to our good pal Xander. And until next time, comics are good, and so are you.